This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We have a very special guest today, one of the most intelligent and best people in healthcare, Ed Marks. Ed, you've had a great history in the healthcare world. You're still creating so many things in the healthcare world. Take a moment and introduce yourself, and then we'll talk about healthcare, health IT, some of the things you do in addition to that, and more.
Well, Scott, first, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being a guest of yours. It's quite an honor. So I was counting back, and it's kind of embarrassing, but it's been about 40 years that I've been in healthcare. I started almost 40 years ago as a 16-year-old janitor in a healthcare facility. And even though at the time I had like a Sony Walkman and I was blasting probably AC/DC or Van Halen or something through my headset, I had this sense of sort of, wow, this is what I want to do for my entire career, is work in healthcare. And I didn't really know how it might manifest itself, if I'd become a physician or a nurse or what have you, but I just knew there was something planted inside of me. So everything I did from that point on was really focused towards healthcare. And so I sort of had a defining moment about 10 years later. You know, I got my degrees and all those sort of things, and I was starting to work in healthcare in strategic planning, actually, as a physician relations coordinator and manager. And I was working with the IT department, and we were having the birth of my oldest daughter, and it was very traumatic. Without going into details, the thing that saved her life was the fact that while our healthcare facility, because it was a little bit in a, not super rural, but somewhat rural, we didn't have like a level one NICU to take care of her. But down in Denver, this is in Colorado, they had a level one NICU, but to move her would have been air flight and a lot of risk. And plus my wife wasn't doing so well, and she was admitted also. And so I had these two patients in one location. Do I split them? I mean, it's very difficult as a 20-something-year-old to try to figure out what to do. And I remember the IT department had this amazing tool that allowed clinicians to, back then it was dial in, so dial in via modem and look at the record and consult. And I was like, why don't we send an analyst, an engineer down to Denver to Children's Hospital, set them up really quick. They can then go into the record system of our hospital and then call the docs and do consults and do it remotely. And that's exactly what they did. So our daughter, who was born without breath, without life, was revived. And despite having three life-threatening diseases, she became completely healed to the point, you know, she graduated at age 18 from college. And so it was that defining moment that I knew that I was supposed to be in IT. So from there, I sort of changed directions. And I've been very blessed and fortunate to be part of awesome organizations in the last few years, serving as a CIO for these different organizations. So that's sort of who I am, sort of my history from a perspective of a career, and why I'm so passionate about, you know, really leveraging technology and digital capabilities to improve the lives of people and save the lives of people.
Well, let me ask you a couple of follow-up questions. I mean, you spent the last several years as CIO at Cleveland Clinic. You worked at THR for a long time as a leader there, and then also spent some time in New York. You've done an amazing, amazing career in health IT. You mentioned at 16 that you had listened to AC/DC, and I forgot which other band, maybe Van Halen. And does that mean you were not a Rush or Neil Young fan?
Well, especially with the recent demise of Neil Peart, definitely a Rush fan. So that would have been definitely my playlist, but not so much Neil Young.
Well, thank you very, very much. And I won't ask you to sing a couple bars of some of the favorite songs. We'll avoid that. In health IT today and healthcare today, what are some of the most interesting issues in health IT today?
So when I think about it, they really come down to one. But let me unpack it, and then we'll repack it. But it's this whole thing about digital transformation. But within that are really the sort of the top things that are going on in healthcare today. You know, so just off the top of my head, some would be, you know, cost, transparency that we're dealing with. Definitely this new focus on the consumer experience, enterprise transformation. When I talk to other C-suite members around the country, around the globe, really, it's really about how do I transform my organization? It can't be the same way that it has been. Data analytics, you know, precision medicine, AI, machine learning, all the sort of buzzwords, but things that are maturing and coming along. And then, you know, a focus on wellness. And maybe the last thing is really what's big tech doing now in healthcare, what are they going to try to do, and the whole retail, new players coming in from the retail side as well. So those are like some of the, I don't know if that was five or seven sort of really big things that are happening that are really interesting in healthcare today. But I think if you had to use just one thing to cover all of them, it might be this whole concept of digital transformation.
And in this digital transformation, you see it both in people getting their care on a base level, but you also see it, and I guess it's a very different thing, in how technology is being used to improve pharmaceuticals and other things to move into a much more precise medicine type of way in ways that just couldn't have been done without this digital platform. Am I inappropriately combining a couple different issues there, Ed?
No, I think they all come together. That's why I sort of put them under one umbrella. But yeah, you have AI taking place, and we're getting a lot, our machines are becoming faster, able to do more precise calculations. Our capabilities of, you know, looking at genomic profiles now, bringing those together with data in the electronic health record. And again, you going back and looking at other data that we have availability to, and making really good sound clinical decisions. And I think we're early stages, but you're starting to see that march towards precision medicine. Everyone gives the example of, you know, if you have I'm really going on basic level here, but if you have a headache, everyone gets Tylenol. Well, you know, Tylenol only works for a subset of the population. So then you're given some sort of other type of medicine for your headache. And that's not very precise. That's sort of a one size fits all. What we're now seeing is the ability to be much more precise in terms of the exact medication that fits best for someone with your profile. So I think that's going to get tighter and tighter over time, and medicine will become much more safe and much more precise. So I think you're spot on. We're definitely headed down that direction. There's so much more, of course, than that, but that's one of the exciting things that I think are just on the horizon.
You served as a CIO, Chief Information Officer, at some of the most prestigious systems in the country. You were there for the beginnings of serious EMR implementation, and then there at the next level, when people started to apply the next level of apps and things to service lines and operational lines in all kinds of ways, this next generation of use in this sort of technology in the digital spot. You've also authored a number of books. What's the book that you're working on now, and what are you most excited about today?
Yeah, so let me take a half step back and just talk about the first healthcare book that I did, which came out in 2019, Voices of Innovation. In fact, thank you to you, we did the official book launch at one of the Becker's conferences early last year. And as a result, it became the bestseller in the healthcare tech space for 2019. So thank you very much. And it was really a credit. It's not so much about me. All I did was convene about 50 authors from around the globe talking about how they do innovation. And it's an excellent playbook for organizations and individual leaders who want to see more innovation happen but aren't quite sure how to do it. It's chock full of awesome examples from government, from small hospitals to large health systems. It's just an amazing collection. Again, nothing to do with me necessarily. I just brought everyone together, but it's really other people's stories. The thing I'm really excited about in 2020 is we have a new book coming out, probably looks like May or June, and it's called Healthcare Digital Transformation, sort of an agile approach. What makes the book a little bit different, what I'm excited about, is we actually did it. So there's a lot of books on digital transformation that are written, and there's nothing wrong with these. So I don't want to cast a negative light, but they're written from a professorial point of view. They come out of academics, which is great, and we need it, and it helps informs and shapes us. And there's other books that are done by consultants who have sort of maybe helped some organizations here and there. But this is based on actual experience of doing digital transformation. And the concept of digital transformation, as much as we want to think that it's new, just like AI, it actually goes back, in my opinion, decades. So it's nothing new, but it's definitely a more popularization of the word. So we actually did this. And so it's full of examples of how to do it. Now, you have to take it within your own culture, you know, some of the principles that are embedded in there, but it's a great catalyst, I believe, for other organizations who are thinking about, okay, digital transformation, exactly what is that? I know everyone's talking about it. I know we need to do it. It incorporates all those other things we talked about earlier, you know, the consumer experience and analytics and wellness. But how do we do this? What have other people done? And what sort of things do we need to know about? And at the end of each chapter, there's like five key things you can do. And that's what I like about the book and the style of the book that's coming is it really is a good story about how you can digitally transform and the benefits thereof, but it's practical too. So it leaves you at the end of every chapter. Okay, here's some things you can do to enable digital transformation in your organization. The other thing, Scott, that's unique about the book is it fundamentally different than what other people talk about when they say digital transformation. And this is how we talk about it from an agile perspective. So a lot of times people think about digital transformation in kind of a what's called a waterfall point of view. Like you have to do A before you do B, before you do C, before you do D. Well, I'm telling you, in the speed of today's business, the speed of today's world, if you take a waterfall approach to digital transformation in your organization, you might be acquired by another organization that's taken an agile approach because you don't have time. You don't have multiple years anymore. And so this is a way, we talk about a way of getting started now. You don't have to have the perfect infrastructure, right? That's one of the base things that people think about first. And when they think about digital transformation, they're almost paralyzed because they're thinking, wait a second, our infrastructure is so far behind. I need a few hundred million dollars, depending on the size of the organization, but it all scales the same way. I need a chunk load of money in order to fix my infrastructure before I can ever think about, okay, then analytics and then finally the experience of my patients or caregivers or company or community. So in the agile approach, we talk about ways of, you don't have to do it in a perfect order. Now there's things you're always going to have to come back and address, but don't wait because one, you don't have the money nor the time to wait to do the right thing for your patients and your fellow caregivers.
Thank you. Let me ask you a couple follow-up questions on all of this. First, where do people find your book, Voices of Innovation? Just quickly, where do they get that book? And that's sort of like a Tony Robbins book where you interviewed 100 different people about leadership and thoughts and all kinds of things. It's really what you've done with Voices of Innovation. It's like 50 brilliant thought leaders or so and got their thoughts on the issues. Fascinating. Where do people get that book?
Yeah, so Amazon's the best place. So I have there's like a bookstore set up. You can go directly to the publisher too, which is Taylor and Francis, but you'll see all my books. I've written a couple other more personal books that are on there. And so it's really easy to grab a book right off of Amazon.
Well, fantastic. Let me ask you another question. You made the comment, there's these professors that have written these types of books, but really don't have the ground floor like education on it because they haven't really done it themselves. And then you made the passing comment we're all supposed to make, and it's great that they write those books. But the question is, Ed, do you really mean that it's great? Or do you think it's sort of like useless sort of discussion because they really haven't really touched it really hands-on?
Well, I think it's always good to be thought-provoking and give you some different ways of thinking about things and pulling in whatever data sources that they can. So I don't think it's a bad thing, but I don't think we can rely on it. We have to make our own experiences. One of the reasons that there's been little progress with digital transformation, and again, I would say decades, is, there's some things we can change and can't change. One thing is the government. So, from a payment reimbursement point of view, you could certainly say, look, some of the reason that growth has been retarded here is because of payment reimbursement structure and the very risk-adverse nature of the FDA and approving new sort of digital things that have amazing digital capabilities. It takes a long time, to go from what did we used to say, from bench to bedside, used to take like 20-some years. I think it's cut down to about 10 years now, but it's still an inordinate amount of time. But the other things, it's not so much, I won't blame anything on academia, but I'll talk about, tradition and culture. From tradition, and again, this is a little bit could be seen as offensive, but I don't mean to offend anyone, but I mean to shake us up, because if we don't get shaken up, someone else like a tech giant is going to come in and shake us up. And I would just question who has the most empathetic point of view on delivering healthcare, those that deliver healthcare today or some tech giant that is there to serve shareholders, not necessarily patients directly. So part of it does go back to us, and that's we're locked in this tradition and this culture in healthcare. So from an IT perspective, we're very inbred. I've always talked about, look, we need to hire people from the outside. You're starting to see that. You're starting to see some chief digital officers being brought in from the outside, from CIOs that are being brought in from the outside. I think that's very rich. And if you're a CIO yourself, hire people outside of IT from healthcare, bringing them in from different industries that are more advanced. So that's one thing. Another thing is finance. We can't operate in an agile fashion using ROI, ROI, ROI all the time and having months and months of various committees. So you have a great idea. Think about that. You have a great idea that's really going to transform the organization, going to make a big deal for patient experience or maybe reduce burnout for your clinicians. But the cycle that it takes to get something approved in most healthcare systems today can be well over a year. And so we can't be that way anymore. And it's the same with supply chain. So I'm not picking on finance. I'm not picking on IT myself. It's everything, you know, supply chain. We go through RFI, then RFP. Each phase takes months and months. And then the amount of resource and capital and requirements that it takes for someone to respond to those and also administer them just takes way too long in this day and age. Think about all the startup companies we know. Think about the successful startups that are now very mature companies. They did not go through that same process, I guarantee you. And of course, there's platform issues that we're well aware of, and I think we're getting better. But there's this whole, you know, the culture, we have risk adverse, and for good reason, but you can take something called calculated risk. It doesn't have to put patients at harm. You know, there's this fear of failure in our culture that we just need to start celebrating failures, you know, that are again, nothing to do with patient safety, but just basic business things. And the final thing is, you know, our culture has said, instead of having grit and just to grind some of these things out to where you start taking those risks and seeing success, we started creating this, I got to come up with a good term for it. I call it the rise of the chiefs. We have all sorts of chiefs coming up. We have chief experience officers, chief innovation officer, chief data officers, chief digital officers. And so our solution in healthcare has been just to add chiefs. But I'm telling you, when you have too many chiefs, just like with anything else, it's going to slow things down, not advance them. So sometimes I'm like, you know, instead of hiring another chief, let's get what we should get out of the chiefs we do have some grit, if you will, and the courage to lead and make some of these digital transformational things happen. So I think those are some of the reasons that we've been a little bit slow, but I do appreciate, you know, going back to your comment, I do appreciate some of the academia, you know, influence to try to help us, you know, overcome some of these gaps. There's definitely some solutions, you know, that we could talk about in order to overcome some of the things that hold us back.
But it sure helps to have somebody that's actually been in the trenches leading it and doing it and their perspective on it. And we appreciate that so much from yourself. Let me ask you a different set of questions. You're a person with incredible energy, incredible, gifted intellectually and people skills, and just a good, good person. I've seen you mentor so many people, just a really good person. You have hobbies, and they are crazy hobbies. It's like running marathons, mountain climbing, karate, all kinds of stuff. What are the hobbies that are keeping you busy that you're most interested in right now? Because I know you're a complete person. You're not just a health IT guy. You're not just an author, but you've also got these incredible sort of energy and hobbies. What are you doing now?
Yeah, I believe that, and if we need people of passion, and I always tell people, it doesn't matter what your passion is. It could be Argentine tango, or it could be, you know, basket weaving, or climbing mountains. You got to have something, because that transfers into all of your life, and you'll be passionate at work to do the right thing for your patients. I mean, that's the driver for me when I approach my work. So yeah, so I'm no different in any other area of life. So a couple of my main passions is, one is I am a member of Team USA, as you know, so I do a fair amount of running and biking and swimming. I'm Team USA duathlon, which is run, bike, run, but sprinkle in some Ironman whenever I can, triathlons. And I just love to do it for a couple reasons. One, it's good for your health. And so if we're gonna be in healthcare, as leaders, we better model it. If we don't model it, then we've lost our voice. So I'm like, I need to model it. Two is I learned a lot about digital transformation. I mean, the digital transformation that triathlon brought to cycling is amazing in terms of the design of bikes. And of course, all the electronics and gamification. So I'm always learning through this whole experience. So I'm getting exercise, I'm learning. And third, it gives me a reprieve, if you will. It gives me that time for meditation. You know, some people like to meditate maybe in a dark room with water flowing behind them, which is cool. But for me, my meditation comes when I'm out there running, I'm doing laps in the swimming pool, I'm on my bike, I'm uninterrupted, I can focus, I can really think, I do a lot of my listening to Scott. I listen to your podcast while I run. So I'm killing two birds with one stone. I'm learning, I'm getting exercise. So that's really, you know, key for me. So that's why I do that. Those are some reasons. And then with my wife, we are also writing a book together. And, but aside from that, we like to hike. So she won't do crazy climbs. We're not going to climb the seven summits. I did a few of them. She's told me absolutely not. I'm not going to do any of those, but that's fine. So we, like, last month we went to the Grand Canyon in one day. We hiked from South Rim to the bottom and back up. She loves to hike. We do a little bit of ice climb in Iceland. So we try to vary it up. It's fun to do it with her together and gives us a chance just to be away from our kids for a little bit and the rest of the world and focus on one another. So whatever it is, those are the two for me. But whatever it is for other people, it's really important to have sort of that quote unquote balance in life and make sure it's not all about the workplace.
That is just it's fantastic. And I struggle with, my passions are these competitive sports that unfortunately age is catching up to me and I am not winning as much as I used to. And it is making me crazy, Ed, but I'll try and figure it out. Anyways, yeah. It's always great to visit with you. We'll look forward to having you be a keynote speaker again this year at our Health IT and Revenue Cycle meeting. And I'm always excited at your energy and what you bring to the table in every aspect of life. And just getting to visit with you is always inspiring and a pleasure. Ed, thank you so much for joining us today. What a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Well, Scott, thank you. And thank you for all that you've done for healthcare. I think your conferences have been a catalyst, your podcasts, all the different media things that you're doing to really bring people together in the entire C-suite. That's what I love about what you're doing. It's not just CIOs, but it's the entire C-suite engagement. So thank you for your leadership.